Over the years, I've whittled down this whole, I guess you could call it an outline, curriculum, whatever you want, into a three-hour presentation. I'm going to try to do it in 1 hour, so have to forgive me. I won't ask forgiveness for going over time. I'll try not to do that, but at least to capsulize some of the main points, because I think there's... Now, I don't claim to offer any great chidushim, but the claim is that constant review of basics, which we may know on a certain level, we may know and have forgotten, we may know, but it's deeply buried inside, is always a beneficial thing and can always help us in the process of developing and growing and perfecting, refining our skills and our abilities, and what I consider most important, in reaching our Talmidim. Of the past years, I've been saying, a lot has been done about teaching, but not enough about reaching. And the goal is reaching, and the goal is really reaching, as I write over here, with a passionate and lasting commitment to Yiddishkeit. That's the goal. We all share that goal. And any good ideas or insights in going about it can certainly be beneficial. But before we begin, I'd like to read something taken from a biography of Meir Shapiro. It's a quote. At a gathering somewhere outside Galena, he once had occasion to speak, and he tried to drive home the overriding need for a good teacher training institute. "Just think," he said, "how many qualifications do we demand from a sheikhet before he will be accepted to do the ritual slaughtering and even the smallest shtetl to provide the little community with kosher meat? He must know well all the relevant laws, down to the last detail. He must have those laws well in mind when he does his work, and his hands must move efficiently so that he doesn't make any blunders. In addition, he must be a devoutly observant Jew, or else we won't trust him. Then, after all that, what do we put into his hands? What do we entrust him with? An ox." He says, "Consider then what qualifications a Malamed should have, a teacher in a classroom, when we entrust to him our children, the young souls who will build and form the future of our people. The children are the foundation of Jewry's next generation, and that makes the most precious possession we have." This obviously was written 100 years ago, or spoken 100 years ago, maybe, I don't know exactly. But I think it's something that's very, very relevant for us to keep in mind. Many years ago, I met a machanech who was very frustrated in his teaching. And he expressed himself very bluntly, saying that my Talmidim are chayis. And it came to me, and I guess I should apologize. I don't know if I ever asked the mechila, "Ey bazoi, you're not a malamed, you're a sheikhet." And that's really what we do. If they're chayis, we're shochtim. If we appreciate what we're doing, then we could bring about amazing results. Okay, so I'd like to talk about some things that I think are critical. And again, in the limited time that we have, we'll just have to be very, very brief. I think we all agree that we live in very, very difficult times. I think back to when I came to this community over 40 years ago. I thought then it was difficult. Now, in certain ways, it may have been more difficult then. Maybe it's more difficult now. It's irrelevant, but there's always difficulties out there. And especially in a world gone nuts, and that's putting it mildly, and the infiltration being so intimate that it's literally at the click of a finger in the palm of our hands. So we really have to be very, very creative in creating a product, a Talmud, that we've reached with such a depth of passion and feeling and understanding and commitment that can withstand everything that surrounds us today. And what surrounds us today, and it doesn't just surround us, but it attacks us. And therefore, I think it's very important to develop some of those ideas. I would say that maybe the singular most important ingredient, summed up in a word, is happiness. If we can be the source, the conduit, the aid in our Talmidim's happiness, I think that we are in a unique position to influence. We can, just by that factor alone do so much for them and position ourselves in a position to have tremendous hashpa on them. So a little bit about happiness. Happiness is very poorly understood, I believe. In the pleasure capitals of the world, and I'm not insinuating anything, but in the pleasure capitals of the world, happiness is equated with pleasure. And nothing can be further from the truth. Everybody knows that pleasure is temporary. Pleasure is, it's physical. It doesn't do anything for the soul. It doesn't do anything for the good feelings. It doesn't give any meaning to life. And it's so fast and so fleeting. Of course, if you keep on doing it forever and ever and ever, then basically what you're doing is you're passing time, you know, or buying time until you leave the world and just trying to keep as much enjoyment as possible. And that's a terrible mistake. I think that the best definition of happiness, which I'm not sure that the world is aware of, is to be found in the sheirish of probably the highest form of happiness, which is osher. Aleph Shin Resh. David HaMelech said, Acha shu'alti me'es Hashem oiso avakesh, shivti be'es Hashem. And about one who sits be'es Hashem, he said, Ashrei yoshvei be'secho. So osher is probably the highest form of happiness. The sheirish of the word is from the word ishur, validation. Happiness is about feeling good about oneself. If one feels good about himself, he is happy. That's all there is to it. That is the ultimate. Happiness comes from feeling good about myself. Now the question is, how do we get there? Okay, we have to discuss that. But just being aware of that opens up a whole vista of opportunities for us to make our Talmidim feel good about themselves. One of the simplest aspects and one of the saddest aspects in terms of the negativity involved is criticism. Criticism is devastating. Sometimes we feel the necessity to criticize, but there is no necessity to criticize. There never should be a necessity to criticize. There's a necessity to educate. Even in the English language, the root of the word discipline, and I know that English has any roots, but the word is disciple. It's about teaching. Everything, corrective behavior, anything that we do is about teaching, is getting the lesson across. Criticism does not get any lessons across. Criticism is resisted, rejected, repelled, and in every which way possible, ignored. So it's not about criticism, but it is about uplifting. It is about making people feel good about themselves. When the Altman Slabodka met Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, he was about, I guess, to embark on beginning the yeshiva. So he asked him, you know, how do you make a yeshiva? And he told him only one pasuk: "Lahachis ruach shvolim, ulahachis leiv nidkoim." Uplift the downtrodden spirits, the broken-spirited people. Just put life into them. Uplift them. And the Alter, of course, built that on the Gadol Sa'odim and the Tzelem and the Kim and all of this to uplift. And that's what Slabodka did. He uplifted. And in the process, he uplifted Mima'amakim, some of the legends of the previous generation, in that uplifting swing, in that uplifting inspiration. You know, there's a story that's told. I don't know if it ever happened, but it certainly could have happened. About a kid who was every day sent to the principal's office. You know, every single day, disturbing the class, sent to the principal. The principal had the same speech he made for him, goes back into class, the next day the same story. This went on for months and months. Finally, one day, same thing happens. The kid leaves, and the next day, model student, an angel. To the end of the year, nobody could imagine what could have happened. Finally, one of the teachers asked the principal, what happened? What you do? What you say differently? And he says, I don't know. He says, same thing. I've been doing it every day. It's the same story. So he calls the kid in. He says, tell me, what happened? So he says, I'll tell you what happened. He says, you were talking to me as usual. And the secretary came in and said, there's a very important person on the phone who must speak to you right now. And you said that I'm speaking to the most important person in the world and I cannot interrupt. That's the whole story. Did it happen? I don't know. Could it happen? I'm sure. Can it have that influence? Absolutely. If we can uplift someone to feel good about himself, then we become the most influential person in that individual's life. And how do you make people feel good about themselves? Well, You know, praise is not necessarily the best way, because praise is resisted, especially by a person who doesn't feel good about himself. He tends to resist the praise. He fights it. He can't believe it. You know, there's a medrash on in Shir HaShirim says Shchira Ani Venovo. So Chazal darshan many different things. One of the things they darshan is Shchira Ani Be'enai. A person can know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu deems him beautiful and still think that he's ugly. I have to discover it myself. I have to figure it out. It can't be flaunted on me, because one who does not feel good about himself will resist that kind of praise. Of course, praise is a nice thing. It's certainly a lot better than criticism. But it's not the story. The real story is discovery. Have them discover. When you love someone, love speaks of validation. The Sipurna says the definition of love is sheyismach o'yev b'malas haneav. The Sipurna in the Akdomah to Shir HaShirim. That means when you love me, then you're appreciating, you're rejoicing in my qualities. You've sent me the message, not by telling me, which I can reject, but by subtly allowing me to discover that I'm worthy. You have so much influence. That's the influence of love. That's the influence that the Ralbag said Yaakov could have melted the heart of Esav, despite the fact that Esav hated him passionately and that Esav had already been fooled twice by him and could certainly think that he's fooling when he sends him the message, Imlovangarti v'chulei v'chulei. But that could have that power, because it's so powerful. It validates. Respect is even as much, maybe even more validating than love. Respect. Now, nobody is suggesting that you stand up when your students walk in the room. Although, I don't know, maybe we should. I never thought about that. But you respect my time. You respect my space. You respect my possessions. You respect my feelings. You respect my questions, my insights, my person. Respect says, why do you respect me? I must be worthy. Sending the message of worthiness is the key to all influence. It's almost as if we can impart any message, internalize, get them to internalize any message, reach the hearts and the neshamas of our students if we are key, are critical in making them feel good about themselves. And I dare say, in a society like ours, where parents are not necessarily all that good about making their kids feel good about themselves. And parental love does not make a kid feel as good about himself as what the Rebbe can do. Because parental love, shkoyach, my mother loves me, she's programmed. It's genetic. She gets paid for that. That's her job. Shouldn't Cholila be like I hear from parents all the time? Not all the time, I've heard it numerous times. I love my kid, I just don't like him. That message gets across. You know, the love is genetic, the like is me. There it is, I'm nothing. So we can't rely on the parents to build the kids. And even if they do, we want to have influence. And in many moistas, we want to have more influence than the parents have. We're sometimes influencing them in a little bit of a different derech. So that is making them feel good about themselves. So I think that's one point that's extremely, extremely important. And you'll find showing them respect. I once got a call. It was actually from some school in this general area about doing a session with teachers to get them to how they can get their students to respect them more. So I wanted to get off the phone quickly. I wasn't interested in the assignment, especially when I heard that it was a preschool. But I told them, I said, the best way is respect them. Model that behavior and they'll respect you more too. And of course, then people are interested in that. But it's true. They follow the model. And they appreciate it, because when you respect them and you validate them, you become the most important person in their life. So that's a critical skill. That's one. I think there's something else about happiness which is also very, very relevant to our work. And that is, imagine a person comes into a therapist's office and he says to the therapist, "Doc, I have no purpose in living." If the doc was smart, he would recommend a suicide watch. Because a human being with no purpose in living is in danger. Like, why? Do you know how difficult life is? You know how challenging life is? You know how boring life is? You know how miserable it can be sometimes? All the problems? And for no purpose, what do I need it for? Unfortunately, that's true in so many circumstances. So a sense of purpose is critical. However, purpose cannot just be anything that I choose. Because if I choose a menial, a degrading, a lowly purpose, it's not going to make me happy. Because I look at myself as something more than that. So it has to be a purpose that can make me feel good about myself. But there's still a problem. Even if it's the best purpose to make me feel so good about myself, is it the purpose for which I was put in this world? And if it isn't, so it's a joke. I decided that my purpose is to raise millions of dollars to prevent the extinction of the whales. I don't know what kind of whales they're preventing these days. You know, it was very nice. I raised millions of dollars. I pocketed a lot of money for myself. But it doesn't give me a real sense of purpose because I don't know if that's the reason I was put into this world. Only Klal Yisrael. The world has been searching for thousands of years and dabbling and borrowing and stealing from Klal Yisrael. But only Klal Yisrael are the ones that are privileged with knowing the true purpose. Privileged with the manual from the manufacturer that tells them exactly what their purpose in life is. And that is critical. When they know that life is about happiness, and we know that happiness has to do with purpose, we have now an opportunity to truly make them happy by educating them, number one, about happiness, and by educating ourselves too, so we could help them get there, and by educating them about the true purpose in life. And of course, the timing is so appropriate now, as the anniversary of Kabbalah Satoira from 3,329 years ago, when the Bnei Olam did a tremendous chesed to Klal Yisrael. He didn't send us a manual in the mail. He didn't deliver it when we might wonder who wrote it, where does it come from, is it fabricated, did somebody make some changes in it. Bifnei Am Vo'edo, an entire nation, millions of nefoshes, speaking directly to us, to communicating, and having already identified himself in Mitzrayim with the greatest of miracles, and now coming in, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, that's me, remember all that? I'm the one, and now I'm going to give you the purpose. Not only that, the teacher, the Novi, the conduit, the one who's going to pass on all of the details to us, was also publicly appointed. So Meish Rabbeinu too, publicly, to millions of witnesses, was known to be the official spokesman. That means Klal Yisrael has today the manual to know what our true purpose in life is. That message, it may be resisted at first, and all messages are resisted because there's an innate resistance to burden, to beholdenness, to pressure, to obligation. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created us that way, so that we should be able to get schar. That's like Godel HaMitzvah V'Yoseh. If we wouldn't have resistance to pressure, resistance to obligation, resistance to mitzvahs, then what kind of schar would we get? That resistance is there, and it's sometimes very strong. And the more they know about the burdens, the difficulties, the challenges, the more the resistance is. But that resistance, in spite of that resistance, we have to know the more they realize that Torah provides the purpose for which we were created, and an ability to live a purposeful, meaningful life, and therefore the ability to have true happiness, it works. It wins eventually. It's a process. It's time. It's frustration. It takes a lot of patience. But that's the message that eventually resonates with them, because we do live in a world which is so struggling for purpose. Now, I hinted, but I neglected to emphasize that they do have to know, and we have to know, and we have to be able to articulate it well, that pleasure does not make people happy. It makes people miserable. Why? Because the subtle message of the pursuit of pleasure is that I am not worthy myself. I need that drink, that food, that thrill, that experience, that fun, that from without, usually in the material, always in the material sense, to get through the day, To be able to function, to be able not to go out of my mind, to be able not to be clinically depressed. That's very depressing. That doesn't make me happy. That makes me feel bad about myself. Myself is worthless. I need all of that. I can't get through without that. I'm lacking in self. I don't appreciate myself. And it's in a sense, it's the antithesis. It's antithetical to happiness. It takes away from happiness and it makes us feel, I'm trash. I'm nothing. I need all of this. So that's a very important message also to be able to convey to them. But there's something else in this purpose, and I think that a few moments discussion about that can be helpful. There's a general purpose, a global purpose, and there's individual purpose. And our Talmidim need both. They need to know there's a global purpose. They need to know what it is. We need to be able to articulate it well. They need to be able to internalize it well. And it has to become part of their thinking. And besides that, they need to know an individual purpose. Now, in terms of the global purpose, there's a very significant point to make. The Torah starts with Breishis Bara Elokim. Elokim is the Midas Hadin. Rashi says later on the Pasuk, B'yoyim Baroi Hashem, B'yoyim Asois Hashem Elokim Eretz V'Shomayim, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Loshon Rashi is, Hikdim, he saw that the world couldn't survive on din alone, Hikdim Midas HaRachamim, Ushotfoi B'Midas Hadin. He was Makdim Rachamim, and he made it a Shutef with the Midas Hadin. So Rachamim and Din are really shutfim in this world. And we have to explain that. That has to be understood. Why does the Torah tell us that he started with Rachamim, with Din? He didn't know. He didn't realize. He learned the lesson on the spot. You know, he was learning on the job. He said, oh, yeah, no, Rachamim, Din is not going to work, so I have to push it. Din, Mishpat, is the greatest chesed. And we have to know it and give it over to us. I mean, Mishpat is the greatest chesed. Why? Because of Nama Tekisufa. Because if I didn't earn it, I'm embarrassed. If I didn't earn it, I can't appreciate it. A wonderful, wonderful individual, a founder, a man who literally helped us in those days and beyond, in your days too, beyond what anyone can imagine, once told me the following. He says, you know, my children give more tzedakah than I do. He told me that. He says, I'll tell you why. Forgive me if anybody's offended. Yeah, and he says because he says he once heard that the old man Rockefeller and his son used the same driver, and he says the driver once says to the old man, Mr. Rockefeller, how come that when your son drives me, he gives me a $25 tip, and you only give me a $5 tip? Mr. Rockefeller said, I didn't have a rich father. I made the money. I worked for it. I appreciate it more. When we work for something, when we earn something, we appreciate it. And it's not embarrassing. The highest level of tzedakah is what? Not the matan b'seser. Thank you. Not a matan b'seser. That's not the highest level. The highest level is giving him a job. He can earn it. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu created mishpat in this world in order to maximize the chesed. However, if it was only mishpat, the maximum would go overboard and we'd never be able to get any place because we can't stand up against Mishpat all the time. So therefore he was hiktim, not short for istam, not tempered it with, but hiktim midas arachamim to midas adin. And the posuk of Oilam Chesed Yibone has to be ingrained in our Talmidim, really, from birth. My high school may even be a little bit late because, you know, they've seen already some of the difficulties of life. Imagine going into people who suffered a terrible tragedy and telling them, oh, Hashem, everything is chesed, oilam chesed, but this is the best thing that ever happened. It's not the time for that. It's true, but they can't handle it. They can't hear it. They can't think that you don't have a receptive audience. But if we nurture our Talmidim before they encounter the challenges, the difficulties, the tragedies of life, which are all part of the Chesed Hashem beyond our ability to comprehend. But once they have that Yisod, Hashem's Chesed, Olam Chesed, you want everything, Kol Ma, De'ovid Rachmona Letavovid. They hear it, they know it, they learn it, and they see it in our actions and in our attitude. Then that message comes across as a baseline so that when challenges happen later, those challenges don't shake them. The challenges of suffering in this world, the tzaddik v'raloi, is one of the time, age, most ancient challenges to emuna, to yadus. Moshe Rabbeinu said, "Hoydieni no estrochecho." Yirmiyahu said, "Madua derech rishoyim tzlecho." It's an age-old question, and people come up with absurd answers. And they have to, the only way to emotionalize, to internalize a proper attitude to that is that to be nurtured on the Chesed Hashem early on, as early as possible, so that when the challenges of life face me, despite the pain, despite the suffering, despite the crying, despite the brokenness, but I realize that everything Hashem does for the good, and it can mitigate, and it can help, and it can sometimes elevate a person from the worst depression and the worst negativity and brokenness, and give him at least that sense of hope and that sense of there's something to this. I think that one of the ways to do that is through a constant alertness and awareness to Hashem's Hashkocha Protis. Hashkocha Protis is such a critical ingredient in our chinuch. Because what Hashkocha Protis really is, it's the realization that Hashem is involved in our lives. By the way, it's the answer to the unanswered prayer. Because if a person looks around, you know, Chazal say, tefillah oise machzo. Tefillah always helps. There's no tefillah that's turned away empty-handed. It always accomplishes something. The question is, sometimes we can't see it. Look at the Hashkocha. Look, notice, pay attention. One who becomes attuned to recognizing Hashem's intricate and infinite and intimate Hashgocha Protis has a different world, has a different connection to Hashem. It provides answers to tefillahs. It provides the basis for a relationship with Hashem. Not the relationship where I talk to him and he doesn't respond. What are you talking? He responded already. Open your eyes. Look around. See what's going on. How many times, if we open our eyes, can we see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is makdim refuah koedim lemako? The refuah was already there even before the mako came. But we closed our eyes. We didn't see. We didn't recognize. We weren't attuned to it. We weren't taught it. How many times, if we could just get them open. So many stories. I mean, I've seen in my experiences of some of the most difficult. I had one in situation where they had a contest, Hashgocha Protis. And the best story, we get $100. This was like more than 30 years ago. $100 is the prize. Personal or family story, not something that you read in a book. This kid who was, in those days, they didn't call it off the derech. They called it the yeshiva bum. He was the yeshiva bum. He would have been voted in by everybody. That was his title, you know. And he comes in with a story, changed his life. Saw how his family was saved during the Holocaust, the whole thing. They were in Budapest in 1944. They had to decide whether to run or whether to hide. They decided they're going to run, get on the train, but they didn't have transit visas. They couldn't go to the next country, but they went anyway. And then they stop at the border, and the guards come in and look at the papers right before it comes to their compartment. An old man sits down next to them, pulls out papers, shows it to the border guards. The border looks at the papers, looks at the family, gives him back his papers. The old man disappears, and the family is all around to tell the story today. This kid was like, God's involved in my life. He's not just theoretical. He's not just ignoring me. I'm alive today because of a miracle. They claim it was Elio Anovi, the family, but I don't know if they know exactly what Elio Anovi looks like. But anyway, and if we can nurture our Talmidim on the reality, and they have to find, you teach someone Hashgocha, it happened here in this community where I gave a lecture once about Bitochon, Hashgocha Protis, and at a seminar, and a young man, 6 months later, I came back with some follow-up, and this guy, I got to tell you the story. He says, I left the seminar, and he wasn't religious, but he was inspired with tefillah and bitochon and hashgocha protis. And my mother was a single parent. She had to marry off my sister. I came back Sunday night. On Thursday night, she had to marry off my sister. She was short $15,000. She didn't know what to do, and I gave her this whole lecture about God takes care of things, and if you pray to him, and if you trust him, and he'll help, and he gets involved in all the details, and don't worry, and this and that. Mother was not so sure, but she, you know, her son was talking, Mela. He says, the next day, somebody comes into her business. She had a costume jewelry business. Comes in to return a $20 necklace that kept breaking. The clip, the clasp kept coming apart. And she kept fixing it, and it kept breaking again. She wasn't. She says, give me my money back. I'm not interested in you fixing it anymore. I had enough of this stupidity. Just give me my $20 back, and I'm out of here. Okay, fine. She's curious as to what was happening. She goes to her jeweler or technician, whatever she has. And she says, could you look at this and see what the problem is? And I'll give you $15,000 for this necklace right now. It wasn't costume jewelry. She made the wedding. This kid said, had I not been alerted, I never would have told her, she never would have known, and I don't believe it ever would have happened. That's Kedarshan, he doesn't know that for sure. But anyway, that's it. If we alert them, then they'll discover it on their own. There's so many opportunities. It's happening every minute of the day. The book that would record all of the Hashgacha Pratis that happened to every member of Klal Yisrael would be the largest book that could ever be written. It's constant. The Golus, the fact that we're here today, 3,329 years later, we're still celebrating the same thing. Like I mentioned yesterday, Einstein was nishtoimim. He wanted to ask Moses if he could ever have thought that this would be so many years later, they'd still be doing his stuff. You know, like, but, and then the individual Hashgoch and everything. This is extremely important to get the Chesed Hashem so that they have the ability to cope with the vicissitudes of life. And the Hashgoch HaProtis also elevates my self-worth because Hashem is being metabol with me. I'm so choshuv. Every little detail of my life is choshuv. He cares about it. He's a principal in one of the schools here. But when he was becoming a Baal Tshuva, I used to learn with him. And then one day we got delayed, and he asked me if I can give him a ride to the railroad because he was going to miss his train. And we passed a stationery store. He says, just 1 second, I have to get. I says, ooh, I forgot. My daughter asked me to get her a pen, and if you could get it. We got it. He comes in, and I figured this is a moment of educational opportunity. I'm gonna teach him something. I say, look at that. Look how God takes care of even the smallest little things. See, we went over time. We rode. I gave you a ride. We passed by the stationery store. You had to get something. That triggered my memory. My daughter in the house. And he says, Rabbi, you don't get it. He says, God doesn't take care of little things. To him, whether your daughter has that pen or not is very significant. That's the right attitude. And if I realize how my little pen is so significant to the Borei Olam, the Melech Olam, who's so busy with so many more important things. You know what's going on in the world today? And he worries about my little, what's tutzichem, my little thing. That's the greatest sense of validation. I must, in fact, be choshuv. And that realization will help them to feel good about themselves. And you, as the introducer of that, will help them to feel good about themselves and become the most important, influential person in their lives. Now, not only is it necessary to have general sense of purpose, but individual purpose can also be very validating. If I feel that every act that I perform, I'm fulfilling a purpose, it has significance, there's a purpose to it. The act in itself makes me feel good about myself because I'm living a life of purpose. Everything I do is purpose. Part of the problem that our kids have today is they don't see I do so many things that I don't know why I'm doing it. Now, you could say that, well, you know, you got to do it. You know, some tzaddikim, some frumis, they want to say, well, it detracts from the lishmo. You know, if you're doing it for the reason that the business has to be the shem shomayim, you know, like. I'd like to address those people. I'm not sure that they're in this audience, but I'd like to address those people. The Tana in Pirkei Avos says, Asei ritzoinoi kirtzoinecho, kedei sheyase ritzoincho kirtzoinoi. I never heard something so bizarre. Do the Rotzon Hashem as if it was your personal Rotzon. Like Avraham Avinu, Sherotzon Lishchoi Toysoi Kedei Lasus Mitzoynecha. Why? You know what your motivation should be? Kedei Sheyase Mitzoynecha Kitzoynoi. That he's going to give you the new car, that he's going to give you the new this, that he's going to give you every little thing that you want, he's going to do as if it's his Rotzon. What kind of talk is that? The Teretz is very simple. The Rebbeinu Shalom really wants to give you everything that you want. He wants to give us everything we want. Everything we want, he wants. Yes, all the little petty things, all the little, not to mention the spiritual benefits of mitzvahs, but even the physical benefits. He wants to give us that. He wants us to give maisa so we should get rich. He wants us to be rich. At any of our heart's desires, he wants to be memale kol mishalis libeinu l'toivo. The problem is we don't always deserve it. So Chazal taught us a trick. Chazal had many tricks. Trick is not the right word, but forgive me. Chazal said, listen, you don't deserve it. If you deserve it, you'd get it. And maybe even tefillah is not going to give it to you because even with the tefillah, you won't have enough schus for it. But there's an alternative method that's called midah keneged midah. Asei ritzoinoi kirtzoinecho, then he'll be able to do ritzoincho kirtzoinoi. But that's what he wants. That's what he wants. He wants, he cares about us. He wants us to have every benefit in this world. So benefits are not cheap. Even the cheap benefits that we want to our Kodesh Baruch Hu are significant. But let's take it a step further. The Ralbag says in the Te'elius, in Parshas Lech Lecha, he says, if you wish to influence a loved one, so that's already talking about our relationship with our Talmidim, right? You want to influence a loved one to do something that's painful and bizarre. He says, bitzar umuzar, something that's painful and bizarre. And I don't know if we realize it, but to a lot of our Talmidim, some of the things, if not many of the things that we want them to do are painful, especially in a world which is doing other things. And some of them seem quite bizarre. You know, we take it for granted, maybe to them, maybe if they've been doing it for years, it's not so bizarre. But sometimes there's a lot of resistance. What do? Tell them the benefits. Before you tell him what it is that he has to do that's painful and bizarre. And he says the cheshek for the benefits will mitigate the pain and the strangeness of it. Very nice. Where do we learn it from? I gave it away before. Parshas Lech Lecha, from the Bris Milah. Avraham Avinu was not told that he has to use a knife for this bris. He was told to enter into a covenant with Hashem. And only after he was told that Goyim will come forth nations and he'll inherit Eretz Yisrael, only then was he told, this is what you have to do, you got to cut. You got to do something painful and bizarre. And it seems clear from the Ralbag that even in Avraham Avinu, had he been given the knife first and been told after, before he performs the mitzvah, the benefits, it wouldn't have been enough. He had to first know the benefits, and that would mitigate that pain and give him a cheshek to want to do it by an Avraham Avinu. No, unless you're zeichet to have talmidim that are on a higher level than Avraham Avinu, which you don't know, there's no cap on Yadus, a person can reach the highest levels, but not too mistaver, then this works. Sefer HaChinuch is all about that. Sefer HaChinuch was afraid not to write a Tamba to Elis in one mitzvah because he's afraid his kid would go off the derech. He says the Torah would appear as Sefer Chosum. He wrote for all the others. And the mitzvah that he was worried about wasn't even a Geala Maisa, it was in the Beis HaMikdosh about Soru Dvash ala Mizbeach. He was afraid. Sefer Chosum. The benefits, knowing the benefits are critical. Rabbi Gifter writes in the Hakdomah to his Sefer on Minchas Chinuch, he says the reason they call it Tamei HaMitzvahs is like, he says, an apple would have the same nourishment if it didn't taste good. But the taste gives it an extra geschmack. You feel good about it. He says, the Tamei HaMitzvahs do that. And Tamei HaMitzvahs give purpose, and purpose makes people happy, and it makes it relevant, and it takes away the burden and the pain. And more than that, when there's purpose, and even though there's a double-edged sword, and you say, well, they're doing the purpose a little bit, you see, Avraham Avinu, that was also permissible and appropriate, but there's a double-edged sword, because then also, then I'm doing it because I want to do it. So if there's a purpose, then it mitigates the pain of force, the pain of burden, the psychological pain of burden, which is very great. And that causes so much resistance, that causes so much lack of focus and lack of listening and lack of paying attention and putting their fingers in their ears. So this way, oh, there's a benefit, there's something in it for me. It mitigates that pain and that pressure as well. So these are some things that I think are very critical in this process. Together with this, once we are aware of benefits, we have to be able to articulate the truth of Torah Misinai. Without the truth of Torah Misinai, it's, I would say, benefits and truth go together. And I would put it like this. If a person doesn't know the benefit that he's going to get from a life of Torah Mitzvahs, he's not going to want to hear about the truth. It won't penetrate. You tell him, you'll prove and prove, prove, prove. By the way, the word prove is a very bad word because it evokes resistance. Anything that evokes resistance, you have to go. The Yetzirah is right there on top of any word, any movement, anything that will burden him, puts up the defense mechanism. So, but we talk about it in a natural way. Shavuos is a very easy time to talk about it. We're learning Chumash, talk about it. Opportunities arise, but it's not like a forceful thing. It's just that you take it for granted. That's why many are against, and they're right, raising questions. You don't want to raise questions. It's like, I used to refer to it as a funny thing happened to me on the way to the office. They used to have such an expression, like, agavurcha, it's, you know, kelachayad. It's just like, take it for granted, you know, but it comes out. One of the things that we did over here, and I'm leaving these here, and they're all available online and could be ordered in person and whatever suits you, is this thing that we did many years ago, Kerman HaShemayim. I can't resist telling you something about this. Years ago, the first time I did this, so my kids were young, and they were just getting used to playing with a computer, so they made stationery for me. They put my name and the yeshiva and this, and then they saw that they write things like this. They said, Mechaber Torah Min HaShemayim. So you didn't realize who you were dealing with over here. Anyway, so in this book, what we do is we combine on every parsha kimat a little vort that's Mechazek Emunah, the truth of Torah, and then another piece that's called benefits and belief, the benefits of the mitzvahs. And that's the winning combination, that the Torah is true and it's beneficial. If I don't know that it's good for me, that's going to make me happy, I don't want to hear that it's true. On the other hand, if I know that it's true, I have a certain strength of commitment. If I know that it's beneficial and I don't know that it's true, there's still a danger. It's wonderful, it's great, you know something? Maybe there's something out there in India that'll make me even happier. But if I know that it makes me happy and I want to listen to the truth and I know that it's true, I ain't going anyplace. Add to that combo that I feel good about myself, that I'm happy, and that's part of how I'm happy, then we have much we can reach. Tell me them. This is the formula to reach. This is how we can reach them. Because once we make them feel good about themselves and we are in that position, they're ready to listen. Once we explain to them the benefits, they're ready to hear the truth. Once they know the truth and the benefits combined, there's a solid commitment there. There's a realization of this is where it's at. This is what it's about. This is going to make me happy. I need no more. Okay. Now that, of course, is there's much written about that. I don't think that's things that I'm sure everybody knows now. In case I am leaving this, this is one of the latest things we came out with to instill a lasting emunah in the changing generation. And there are pieces here, some are on the psychology of emunah, the resistance that people have, and the meaning of mitzvahs, the source of happiness. And there should be another piece here on the key to a meaningful life, the purpose of human existence. And there should be something about the truth of Torah Misinai. But that's in many places you have that. And that's not, I don't think there's anything, let me see. You know, there's books, there's stuff that's written. We have stuff on our website. We have also an app which has a lot of these things. Here, the truth of Torah Misinai, page 25. This is something I'll leave. Again, these are available. Anyone wants to order, you can download them. I believe you can order them. We'll be happy to send them to you free of charge. Okay. Next. There is another ingredient which I think is critical. I just feel bad for not just officially mentioning it. In terms of the truth of Torah Misinai, there's two concepts. One is the testimony, eyewitness testimony passed down in a document that records the fact that they saw it with their own eyes. Atem ra'isem, mashasis mitzrayim, atem ra'isem, shemin shemaim dibarti mochem, and so many more times, maybe 50 times, the Torah refers to remember, don't forget what you saw. Testimony and evidence. Information that no human being could have known at the time. All the nevuas and so much scientific information, both in Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebaalpeh. This is something I believe every Rebbe should. A lot of it is in here, and a lot of it is not in here, but there's so much available today. New scientific things also. It's very, the more they hear about the evidence that exists, no human being could have known such things. It's like, it's mind-boggling. And it really shakes people up. It's like, it's very hard, you're hard-pressed to dispute that. I don't have the time now to go into examples, but there's so much of that available. Okay.
Do you see the benefits?
What's that?
The benefits. Were you clear on what, how do the kids see the benefits?
Thank you, Rabbi. I'm getting old. Number one, they're not my grandmother's benefits. My grandmother once was very, she was burnt by a pressure cooker that exploded. She was lying in bed for a few months. I remember, oy in Yenevelt it zayna zoi gliklich. In the next world, it's going to be so wonderful, so happy. They don't want to wait till Yenevelt. Our kids can't wait till the next minute. It has to be the benefits in the here and now. That's number one. Those that talk about Olam Haba are making a terrible mistake. When they hear the word Olam Haba, they don't want to hear. It's too much. It's too far away. Leave me alone. So it's benefits. And the benefit, the major benefit, is happiness. Now, if what Chazal say, we can bring that home, is Lo nitno ha-mitzvahs ela letzaref venes abriyos, to refine human character. And we can connect the refinement of human character with feeling good about myself. I'm a better person. I'm a kinder person. I'm a more sensitive, more honest. I'm a more godly person. So more godly, that's great for my ego. I feel good about myself if I'm godly. What can make me feel better? Not only that, and that's really the next topic I want to try to get in before we finish, it can develop passion because I have a connection to Hashem. And we'll get to that in a moment. But it's these types of things that they should see every Shabbos. Shabbos can be, now, Shabbos is a challenge because kids have more problem, you know, they're tired. I want to do this, I can't do what I want to do. By the way, what I do is I tell them like this, I say, oh, you really, you mean if I'm restricted, I can't play ball, I can't do this, I can't do that. That's not really Menuchas Shabbos. Say, you know, you're right. So Rashi in Parshas Mishpotim says that, and Rashi says that you cannot muzzle your shor from graining, from grazing on Shabbos, because that wouldn't be menucha. But one thing is for a behemah, not for a human being. A human being is a higher person. An animal only knows, if you don't let me do what I want to do, but menucha, there's a higher level menucha. There's a menucha on Shabbos, and by the way, there's a piece, doesn't have it. It may have it in here, if not, there's a book that we published here yet, Reflections of the Heart. Has a beautiful piece on Shabbos. I just want to tell you the main story, because this is something that, even if, and that's another thing in Chinuch, by an hour is not enough. Yeah? What's that? You wrote? Yes, sir. We republished it, but it's the same writing. We never rewrote it. Thank you. Rabbi Stuhlberger wrote it. Okay, anyway, yeah, the kids are like this. So this story, this I heard from my father-in-law. I heard this story. I don't know how he said. There was a German poet. His name was Heinrich Heine. He was a Meshumet. I don't know what he was exactly. So he wrote like this about Shabbos. He says there was a benevolent Polish landowner, you know, one of these poets. And he came to visit his, he was a nice guy, he used to visit his tenants. So he comes into this family Friday night and he sees them sitting around the table. He sees they're singing zmiras and they're talking to each other. It's such a beautiful, tranquil atmosphere. But then he notices that it's leaking in from different sides of the roof and that the tablecloth is patched and the clothing is tattered and the food is sparse and there's obviously, the table is shaking, there's real poverty here. And the contrast overwhelmed him. The tranquility contrasted with the poverty was like beyond imagination. He walks up to the Balabas, says, Rabid, one wish, anything in the world you want is yours. Mamish, an opportunity of a lifetime. Bekitzer, he says to him, could you please, the candle is bent over and it's dripping and it's going to go out too fast. We won't be able to continue enjoying the meal. Could you please be so kind as to straighten it up? And what he saw there, whether he meant to make fun of us or not, I don't know. But what he saw there was that the world of the Jew is so complete on Shabbos because he can't do anything about anything. Because he knows that there's a creator. He's celebrating that creation. He knows the creator takes care of everything and he relies on him. And he has that trust in him when he closes his business and he doesn't worry about anything. He says his world is so complete that he can't relate to the question of, what are you lacking? What? I don't know what that means. What? I can't imagine lacking anything even for after Shabbos. Except I need a Shabbos goy. That's all. A Shabbos goy is the only thing that's like, even that he shouldn't be lacking, but that he didn't know. But that's all. So we can express these things. Now, Shabbos, they may not buy it today. I mean, they do, but the benefit, the resistance, but Chinuch is about Tchilas Knisas Odom Le'umnes She'osid Lamod Boy. It has to last. And it's only the Tchilas Knisas. It's not even the Knisas. All you want is the Tchilas Knisas. And planting these seeds with positive ideas, with positive motivation, can make a difference, if not in the short run, and for many they will, then certainly in the long run. And it reverberates and it grows. And as they have more responsibility, they begin to see, yes, what it means. And at least they've heard. And they see this positive attitude, and it makes such a difference. Okay, we just have a few more minutes. I'd like to just try to touch a few more things. Passion. Passion is very important. Passion is so important that I have to tell you that I believe that without passion, the Yiddishkeit that we do succeed in implanting in them may not be permanent. Today, there's a massive new problem. It's not teens going off the derech. It's adults with families, children, parents, you know, successful, seemingly happy. Husband, wife, take a walk. And if they don't take a walk, some of them are hiding. Some of them are openly Mechalel Shabbos. One woman told me her husband loves cultural Judaism. He sits at the table and he makes Kiddush and he sings Miras. And after the meal, he goes into the bathroom and sits on his computer the whole Shabbos. And these are yeshiva educated people. The yeshiva educated people, in my humble opinion, without passion. They got a certain sense of commitment. They got a certain sense of obligation. They got, but passion. We need passion to fight the burden of Shibud. Kabbalah so Malchus Shemayim is difficult. We have to do it twice a day in order to survive. But they need that passion. Passion helps. Rashi says in Chumash, says, V'haftas Hashem lekecha, Ava is a passion. So it says, Eino doime ha'oived miyira ha'oived miyava. Because ha'oived miyira, Rabbi matriach olav, v'hoylech loy. If he's ha'oived miyira, too difficult, gets too hot, I'm out of here. That's all. Not so ha'oived miyava. Ha'oived miyava is with a passion, with a commitment. That commitment based on, it's feeling. I feel it. I want it. It's me. I connect with the Rebbeinu Shalom. Hashgacha Pratis helps in that. Bitochen helps enormously in that. Bitochen is, I mentioned yesterday, Bitochen is a form of expression of a relationship with Hashem. And for that purpose, I'm leaving you a letter from the Chofetz Chaim in Machne Yisrael. I appreciate if you make copies for everybody, where the Chofetz Chaim clearly states what Bitochen is, how it's about getting the things that we desire, it's about being 100% sure. And he says at the end, the punchline, first, he says before Rabbi Machov Narosh of Abtech Hashem Chesis Ovevenu that you don't even have to be a tzaddik to have bitochen. But then he says Ulefi Goydel Habitochen Kein Hu Goydel Hatzlocha. It's not all or nothing. It's not 100% gets, and then if not, that makes it too difficult. That makes it impossible for us to have that relationship. Lefi Goydel Habitochen. It's commensurate. I guess if I have bitochen, I want to get $10 million. I only have enough bitochen. I only have 10%. I'll get $1 million. The fee, God la bitochen, keinu, God la tzlocha. Something that really is something everybody should read this letter. It's amazing, and it's talking to soldiers, not to tzaddikim. I mean, the stipler was also a soldier in the Russian army, but it's talking to other soldiers too. And it's poshut to yidden, and he talks to them the mamaloshen and tells them exactly what this. So that's it. Bitochen is a form of relationship with Hashem. Hashgacha Pratis is a form of relationship. Tefillah that's made meaningful is a form of relationship with Hashem. Tefillah that's used as a stepping stone to bitochen is a form of passion and relationship with Hashem. Tefillah, biur tefillah, where we explain what the words mean, does not do anybody any good. Blessed art thou, we used to say. Now we should say, blessed are you. Come on. Art school made a lot of accomplishments, but that doesn't do the whole thing for us. There has to be an appreciation. What am I doing? What does it mean to have a connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? What does it mean to have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? And then I would suggest one more thing. And again here, you know, on the one hand, I'm promoting the our wares, but I'm not charging for it. So you can't really have any tainus. You know what I mean? Baruch Hashem, I get sponsors for these things. Because I learned, even though paying a little bit makes it more choshev, but it makes it more choshev for less people. That's just the way it is. I'd rather be less kosher for more people, and the cheshivas itself will have to carry itself. We have already a second volume on Shir HaShirim, and it's poshed little vertlach on different psukim Shir HaShirim, and it's again the repetition of the concept that HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves us today in the Golus with a passionate love. A passionate love to the extent that Rashi says on the Pasuk, Yisei b'yinayich minegdi, shei mirivuni. Rashi says it's a marshal to a chosin that tells the Kala, turn your beautiful eyes away from me, I'm going to lose myself if I look at the beauty of your eyes. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Kala Yisrael, in the Bayis Rishon, I saw you with the Oron, the Kapiris, and the Kruvim, and it caused me a chiba yaseiro ad shema altembi. I loved you so much and took it for granted. You rebelled. In the second bias, I'm not going to give you those things because I'm afraid it'll cause me chiba yaseir again. The Rebbeinu Shalom Kaviyochel expresses his love to Klal Yisrael as uncontrollable. This is after the churban. This is after sinning. This is in the golus. Uncontrollable love. I'm afraid I might lose it. Lose it like the lady with the beautiful eyes. Not shaykh. and Klal Yisrael has that love. The chiddush of Shlomo HaMelech was that the love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Klal Yisrael, and Klal Yisrael to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is alive and well today. And I suggest to you that as we share these things, one example, and another example, and another example, and there are hundreds in Shir HaShirim alone, and there are so many other examples too, we begin to get that idea across that there can be a loving, passionate relationship. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu has passion for me to this very day with the way He knows that I behave, I can start to begin to have a little passion for Him too. And that forges, add that to the tefillah, and the tefillah becomes another form of connection, that person, that bitochen with Hashkocha Protis. And if we can fire up that passion, and again, that passion doesn't come from fear, because fear turns people away, that comes from love. And if you're concerned about Yirah Shomayim, which is a very big concern, so I'd like to share with you a Rashi in Koheles. Rashi says on the Posuk, Seif Dovra Kol Nishma, Shlomo HaMelech finished. Havel Avodim, the whole world, there's nothing out there. What's the end game, the end story? HaKol Nishma Sadekim Yirah Abis Mitzvoy Sob Shmor Kisei Kol Odom. Zok Rashi, Seif Sadekim Yirah, what you can do, you do the best you can, and your heart should be heavenward that you want to do better. You want to know the purpose of creation? The purpose of creation for us, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's purpose was to do chesed, but for us was mashatuchal asei velibchol hashamayim. That's not a cop-out. That's not Nebuch, this kid can't do, oh, you're so stupid, you're so incapable of anything, oh, you just do the best you can. That's lechatchila, that's for everyone. That's Seif Dovra HaKoyel Nishma, Shlomo HaMelech's message to the whole world. Mashatuchal asei velibchol hashamayim. That's the definition of Yirah Shamayim. That reduces pressure. Pressure should be reduced on everybody. The pressure is the thing that chases more people away from Yiddishkeit. And to conclude, I'd like to just add just one more point. And that is as follows. Today, as I mentioned, we live in a world where there are a lot of sakonas. And a lot of our finest are succumbing to sakonas. And I dare say, and from my experience, and I must admit that I have a lot of experience with this element, some of our most brilliant and deeply sensitive are being lost in the process of their education. In fact, it's more likely than not. When we had our at-risk high school, I always said that the mean IQ there is higher than in any other high school. The kids that went off the derech, that's not a compliment to them. It's not because there's anything invalid in what they left, but it's because they internalize the pressure so much. They get it. They know how serious it is. They know it's like, I say, like, you know, if you give a kid a job, so sometimes a job can give a kid responsibility when he never was able to have it. But the reason for that is because it's limited responsibility. If you fail at the job, you get fired, you get another job. What do you do if you fail with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Where are you going to go? My relationship with Him is on the rocks. Now what am I going to do? There's no place to go. And they get it. They know it. And they have sensitivity. They feel it. They feel the importance. They can't take it. The pressure is overwhelming, overwhelming. They run away. Something else happens also. People that have become, many of the people have become religious. Even those that have remained so say, and this is a quote, I never made a decision to be religious. Either it was hoisted on me, I was pressured into it, or I went with the flow. Everybody was doing it. I never made a decision. It was never a commitment. It was never a conscious decision. And therefore, it's so weak because it's not my own commitment. It's not me. But if I can make that commitment, and pressure forces people into a mold that they may not fit. Remember, one size fits none. Everyone is an individual, and everyone needs a different type of a molding, and it's just like their faces look different, and their thinking is different, their experiences and their capabilities are different. We must deal with each one as an individual. And when they feel pressured into it, they never made a decision. Or they just went with the flow. Everybody's doing it, you know. Those are not good. It has to be a process where an individual studies, he learns, he imbibes, he evaluates, he's educated, he's reached, he feels good about himself, he feels good about the purpose in life, he feels good about the Rebbeinu Shlomo, he has that relationship with the Rebbeinu Shlomo, he feels a passion, and that altogether can lead to a conscious commitment which has the ability to continue on and to really be able to be maintained and to face the challenges of life and to face up to them and not to shake at every obstacle or every challenge along the way. And the end result could be a very successful and positive experience of reaching our Talmidim with such a passionate and a lasting commitment to Yiddishkeit, that truly the goals of our chinuch, which is, it should be a umnes she'osid lamoid boy, that they will maintain it, not that we get them today and then we don't worry about the future, that the future will be bright and they will continue the commitment, and that'll be zeh schoreinu mikol amoleinu.
Go ahead.